So we're inundated by new content every second of the day. You know, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google Plus, and there's always news coming in from a lot of third-party websites. Today's guest is going to teach you how to wage content warfare and fight back. How you might add by being great at what you do. So let's get started. Ryan, welcome. We're really glad to have you on today's podcast.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
So for those of you who don't know Ryan Hanley, he's the owner of the Content Warfare Podcast. It's a podcast dedicated to helping you battle for online attention. And as our lives, they get more busy, it's hard not to feel overwhelmed. This is something that we all have struggled with. I know I have when I first got involved with social media. It was trying to figure out, how do I get all of this stuff accomplished in such a small amount of time? And I stumbled across Ryan's podcast through iTunes. It was actually a recommended podcast when I was setting up my own. And, I got to thinking, content warfare, what is this? It's a really catchy title. And I subscribed to it, and they're now at 41 episodes and counting, and there's a lot of, distinguished guests on there. But I think the key takeaway is that there's a lot of value in the content that's shared. So, Ryan, I want to hear from you. Can you tell us about content warfare? For listeners who don't know, what is it? And then a second part, was there a catalyst that got you started?
Yeah, so I guess I'll spin the wheel back just a little bit, not all the way to birth, but just a little bit to give people the story makes more sense if you understand a little bit of the backstory. So, about 5 years ago, I became a traditional insurance producer, a salesman for an independent insurance agency, and I realized very early on that I hated the traditional sales process. I hated cold calling. I hated stopping into businesses randomly. It just was not for me. And one day I happened upon a kind of local chamber networking event, as most salespeople who are early in their career do, and I heard a mortgage broker talking to a real estate agent. So, as an insurance professional, two people who would potentially be centers of influence, two people I want to know, say to each other, "Well, geez, just send me," well, they were talking about something which I couldn't really hear, but I heard, "Well, geez, just send me a message over LinkedIn and we'll connect further." I had never heard of LinkedIn before. I wasn't, I am not a social media techie person by nature, so now a lot of what I do is very much online, but I wasn't drawn to the online part, so I wasn't aware of it. So it just blew me away. I was like, there are conversations happening in a space that I have no access to right now because I'm not there. So I immediately left the networking event. I didn't go introduce myself. I was there for like maybe 25 minutes. I left, went back to my office, and like just dove into LinkedIn. Like, what is this? Got into it. Immediately I saw people sharing articles. I saw them sharing thoughts. I saw them sharing all these different pieces of content. And then people were connecting to them. And I said, "Oh my gosh, how did I not know that this existed?" So fast forward, I started blogging about my insurance agency. So just as a way to make money and draw new leads and grow the agency through blogging. And where content warfare came from was so much of what we do. So single location, family-owned, independent insurance agency, trying to break out of the perpetual noise online. Like, we don't have a big budget. Actually, our budget was almost zero. I pretty much created the thing from scratch out of WordPress. I got the company to pay $45 for a Genesis child theme that I then custom designed myself. I'm using the MailChimp, a free email newsletter version, email newsletter marketing system. So, I mean, I am going as budget as possible with this thing. So, how do we break out of, or better yet, how do we gain attention when there's so much noise in this space? And content warfare was really a place for me. It was kind of like my petri dish, right? So I do a lot of text-based blogging there. I've done SlideShare stuff, do a ton of video stuff because I'm really into that right now. And Content Warfare really became my petri dish, the blog itself. And from that, I wanted to try podcasting. I said, geez, you know, it just seems like I hate commercials on the radio. It's why even though I love sports, I can't listen to ESPN radio anymore. It's like there's like 3 minutes of talk and 15 minutes of commercials. It's terrible. So it makes sense to me that there are sports radio, comedy, political, local, business and marketing podcasts with no commercials that you can really make this genuine connection with people. And kind of get to the point of what I'm saying, I also saw it as an opportunity to network with influencers in this market and kind of pick their brain. So I'm using my platform so that they can spread their own message, and at the same time, I'm getting all this knowledge from them. And it is, just finished my first year. Chris Brogan was our 40th episode, and was a great way to finish off the first year. And Ian Cleary, the 41st episode was published today. And Ian Cleary from Razor Social, amazing, amazing guy, who I would encourage you to reach out to for this podcast. Came on and talked about social media tools, and now I have 15 new things that I want to do. And it's all just perpetually learning and implementing, and it's a battle, and that's where content warfare came from.
So as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, there's new content coming at us every single second of the day. You know, this can become extremely overwhelming. I wanted to break things down into the three C's. Content consumption, content curation, and content creation. Mm-hmm. And starting off with content consumption, you know, tackling that flood of information, this is essentially, you know, that fire hose of information that's coming at you.
Yep.
As a social media pro, you know, I've been using a lot of tools. I've used Hootsuite, Agora Pulse, Buffer, Sysomos, Google Analytics. You know, I use Tagboard to keep an eye on hashtags. And I use these tools regularly, but this is because, you know, I know about them and, you know, I've been, you know, a seasoned veteran in the industry. So there's all this information that's coming at you. You know, people need to be able to tackle that fire hose. Are there any tips or tools that you can share with readers, you know, to help them control that flow of content? They don't get overwhelmed. And, you know, when people have trouble harnessing that content, you know, I think instead of actually fighting, they actually just give up.
Yes, they become overwhelmed. And the sheer volume of content force, you know, they don't read anything or don't consume anything because there's so much. Absolutely happens. I think it happens to all of us, and it's almost like part of the journey, right? And then we all have kind of our own way of overcoming the onslaught of content that's available. So for me personally, it comes down to segmenting within each tool. Or in each space is probably a better word to use. So for Twitter, I use Twitter Lists. I actually do not use a social profile management system. I actually go into this is probably not a social pro tip that many people want to follow, but I actually use in my Chrome browser, I have like a password memory tool and just a hot link button that takes me to each tool. So I find that if I use like a Hootsuite or something, I become overwhelmed in that tool because I have all these messages coming from all these different networks. So I'll say, okay, I'm going to spend 10 minutes on Twitter. I go into Twitter and I've segmented out, I follow just about anyone who I think is a human being who follows me. There's a lot of different theories on that.
Yeah. That probably takes, you know, a lot of time right there.
Yeah.
Identifying who's actually real.
Yeah, so, you know, I just click, and yeah, it's kind of like the first thing I do in the morning, the last thing I do at night. I try not to make it like a big deal, and I get one summary email a week from Twitter, which you can set up in your settings, of everyone who's followed me for the week. So maybe it's 100 people, maybe it's 20 people, it all depends on the week, but I'll get this summary email, and I'll just run through. And if it's somebody like that I can just tell right away I wouldn't be interested in, then I just don't follow them. But most of the people I do. And But there's a caveat to that. Most of those people I will never interact with because people who I know I'm interested in, I segment into Twitter lists, and it's those Twitter lists are how I actually consume content on Twitter. So if I'm interested in, you know, like people in the digital or content marketing space who I respect and know share a lot of good information. Well, I have a list. There's maybe 150 people, and I go to that list and I look at just that feed for articles and to consume on Twitter. Or if I'm interested in local people, I go to my local list or my insurance list or whatever I'm interested in consuming at that time. And I segment on Twitter that way because I know that if I were to just look at my whole thing, it would make no sense to me. So I really just look at people who've sent me messages, and then I look through my twists or my lists on Twitter. That's how I personally do it. Then I like to take my brain out of Twitter mode because that's one way of communicating. And then say my probably my favorite social network, which is Google+. You know, there's a different way of thinking about it. So I go into Google+ and I look through circles, I look through communities, and I segment my information that way. I never look at the like full stream for any of these, any of the social networks if I can, because I want to be able to see a certain type of content at a certain time. If I'm in, you know, again, Google+, I'm in there looking for more information on Google+, maybe SEO, since a lot of the really kind of heavy hitters in the SEO industry tend to hang out on Google+, so I have a dedicated list to that. You know, different, you know, just kind of people that I find very interesting, that self-development. Mm-hmm. So I have these different circles, and I segment my content that way.
Yeah, it's basically like taking that fire hose and
breaking it down into
breaking
pieces.
Up into a glass of water, you know, like
yeah, exactly.
You got individual places. You know, I'm actually a huge Twitter list user myself.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't use Twitter list. A lot of people use the hashtags and like a Hootsuite or something like that, and they break it down that way. I don't know. I personally like to have my brain. Each platform to me is a different way of you communicate in a different way on each platform.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to segment the platform. So I just go into the native. I mean, probably any social media person who's listening to this is like cringing right now, but I go into the native applications and I do all my interaction in the native applications.
Yeah. I mean, you can add, you know, Twitter list in Hootsuite, but I do like, you know, the, you know, what you're suggesting there, you know, which is, you know, it can become overwhelming because, hey, if I've got, you know, 10 different buckets of information, you know, it's a little visually overwhelming.
Yeah. And you're at replies and then direct, and you got all this different stuff. And
or by the time you get to one feed, maybe the other one's updated and now you've got to refresh and it's like, oh, hey, there's 10 more, you know, 10 more tweets or whatever to look at.
Yeah.
You know, now speaking of something like that, you know, I think maybe with Twitter list, I mean, it's such a valuable tool. You know, there's the whole public and the private side of things, but I think a lot of people don't use it. Possibly because, you know, it's very hidden.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, for instance, like if I wanted to see your Twitter list, I had to actually go to your account, click on the list on the left-hand side, and then, you know, click again to see who's actually in the list versus seeing that stream.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a
I don't know why. It used to be I think the update was like a year or so ago, maybe more, but it used to be lists used to be a lot more prominent on the profiles. And they actually, when they did the most recent update, which it has been a while now, they made it harder to get to. I don't know why they did that, but they did. And, you know, you also have to hope that people named their lists correctly. Like my list of like probably the people that I am most interested in is called business. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It's just the name of the list I started collecting people on. It really in no way describes who these people actually are, but that's what it is. So
yeah,
it's a convoluted way to kind of do things, but I think that it can be a very powerful tool if you're willing to take the time to segment them out and make, you know, and put people into these buckets.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, like one, taking the time is important. And I think like, a lot of people, you know, like I said, they get overwhelmed, you know, and they don't, you know, they basically just give up. I mean, before they even get started, I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I think people, you know, they have a hard time consuming the content to begin with, and then they, you know, they don't get involved with it. And then, you know, at some point they just give up, you know, they just have to jump in and actually say, hey, you know what? I have to learn how to do this. Otherwise it's going to always consume me. You know, you can't turn off the fire hose. It's always the only way you can turn off the fire hose is to disconnect from, you know, the internet and just not be connected at all socially.
Yeah, you know, it speaks to a larger issue with everything, not just consumption, but also curation and creation, is the idea that a lot of times we start our online endeavors with unrealistic expectations of what is possible and the time frame that it's possible in. The reason that I had Chris Brogan on my show, for anyone who's familiar with his story, is that about in 2009 is really when his career went from being, you know, a guy that people know to this kind of upper echelon, you know, kind of digital marketing royalty, which actually he's probably moved past just the digital marketing world, and he's more of a true business consultant looking at more than just kind of the marketing and social media side of things. But people said, oh my gosh, this guy is an overnight success. That was like the buzz term flying through the industry in 2009, was he is this overnight success. And he did a series of videos, which I found to be fascinating and just so genius, where he actually videotaped himself with his cell phone camera, like walking through an airport at 3 a.m., like, you know, checking into his hotel at 6:30, and then you know, having not slept, and then having to get back up at 8:30 to do a 9 a.m. keynote because he was in some other city the night before. And like the whole purpose of this video series, which he did over the course of a couple of weeks, was to say, I work hard. Like, this is not overnight success. It took me 9 years. Like, he started out in this world in like the early 2000s. So it took him like 7, 8, 9 years to reach the level that he got to. And people were calling him an overnight success because, yes, he went from being kind of an industry name to a household name, relatively speaking, very quickly. But all that time that he put in, it took him 9 years to build up the credibility and kind of pay the value forward that allowed him to make that jump. And so many of us get in reading stories about, oh, you know, you just write one really great blog post and it goes viral and now you're a celebrity. That is just simply not a reality, at least not for, you know, you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning on the same day that you win the lottery than having that happen to you. So setting more realistic expectations and goals helps with all of this. With all the stuff that we talk about kind of in the digital space.
So jumping into, you know, that second part, you know, content curation.
Yep.
You know, this is basically, you know, you've got that fire hose under control, but it's, you know, finding things to share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I think, you know, which I think people will find as a recurring theme here is that, you know, there's a lot of value in the content and Warfare podcast. How does somebody go about finding the value in the content that they are consuming? You know, you mentioned you set up a lot of lists with specific individuals, but it seems like there's a lot of duplicate content that's being generated across the web.
Yeah.
Are there any techniques that you follow to curate content, you know, quickly and efficiently? Like, okay, great, I've got these lists set up, but how do I actually, you know, separate the quality content, you know, from the poor quality content?
Yes, great question. I use Evernote to capture that content. So Evernote is a tool. You can, it has, you know, it's free for the most part. There's some advanced features that you can pay for and stuff, but it's free. And you download it onto your laptop, onto your iPad, onto whatever. It goes across all the platforms, both mobile and, you know, stationary. And you can add a little widget to any browser, i.e. Firefox, Safari, or Chrome. And when I find an article that I want to actually implement, I simply click this button and it takes that article and adds it to a directory on my Evernote platform, which is then spread out through the cloud to all my devices. So I'm collecting articles on, you know, content marketing strategies, SEO strategies, email marketing strategies, web design, all the things that I'm interested in that help me both improve content warfare as a brand and me as the platform I'm trying to build, and also my insurance agency, which is my full-time job and really one of my primary goals is growing this agency through these practices, actually the real life application of them, not just kind of regurgitating them. I can go back in and say, okay, I clipped 3 articles today, and you know, after I'm done eating my dinner, I can leaf through them and then cut out the areas that I really actually want to implement, and then that next day when I show up to work, I can actually put them into practice. So it's all this like funnel. So you have all this information on Twitter, and then I take lists and I cut it down a little bit, and then I take that and I bring it into Evernote from what I find there, and then from Evernote I'm taking out just the individual pieces of information that I want to implement, and it's just kind of a step-by-step process. Gets you to, you know, maybe I clip 4 articles from the day from the web to Evernote, maybe I only implement 2 pieces of advice, you know, so a really great way to adjust your headlines on emails that increases your conversion rate. Well, geez, that's something I want to implement because email marketing is very important to my business. So I'm going to write an email tomorrow with this kind of new look headline and see if I get any more traction. And you know, there's a million articles produced in a day, and I took that one little bite of information and implemented it. And if it works, then that was successful consumption and curation.
So speaking of, you know, content, like I use Evernote myself. I absolutely love it as a tool. By the way, we'll mention that in the show notes. But how do you go about, like, as far as like creating content, like, okay, you've consumed somebody's content, say it was something that was related to, you know, changing a headline on email marketing. You know, that's a great way, obviously, to do a little, you know, split testing, that sort of thing, to kind of learn, you know, what you need to fix on your own site. But as far as like, say you consume some news articles, that kind of thing, what do you do with that content? Do you actually turn it into blog posts? Do you just consume it? Or do you just collect it? Because I mean, essentially, you know, it just becomes like, hey, I got this.
It's like baseball cards, kind of. Yeah. Like, look at the articles that I have. Well, I would say that my consumption and creation, my consumption side is 100%, or I shouldn't say 100%, is split. So not 100% at all. It's split 50-50 between articles that I think are interesting that I want to reshare to my community that both enhance my brand and the value that I create to the people who follow me in social spaces. So if you want to grow your audience, grow your platform, is to share the information of other thought leaders, because it's a reflection of you that you're willing to put other people's material in front of your audience. And it just adds validity to you because, you know, those of us that are truly secure in the information that we create are not necessarily threatened by other people's content. So, and that's something that people get and are interested in. And that's one way. And the other way is if I see that same article and there is something I want, then I clip it to Evernote and I keep it and I implement it.
Yeah.
Okay. To actually get to the answer of your question, when creating content, that is almost 100% a reflection of things that I'm doing that I see working or not working, I then share. So I try not to, as much as you can, we're obviously all influenced by someone, I try not to just regurgitate other information. I try to find things that maybe I don't think have been talked about in a while, or I see as maybe possibly being a little unique or interesting or just my own particular spin, and you know, and create content around those topics.
So as far as like people getting, by the way, we're going to get into the third C here, which is content creation, you know, going beyond just sharing other people's content, actually, you know, creating your own.
Yep.
How much content should people actually be creating? Should they be blogging daily, 2 to 3 times a week, monthly? You know, what do you recommend? I mean, I think it probably varies because, you know, everybody's got, you know, a different like niche that they're in, but what's your secret, I guess?
That again is a very debatable question, and if you asked 100 people, you'd probably get many, many different answers. You know, if you talk to like the Derek Halperns or the Gregory Ciottis.
They blog, you know, like once, you know.
Once a month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're producing content like once a month, maybe twice a month, all about promotion of that content. So then they're doing lots of different promotional activities, such as sharing on social media, email marketing, having their friends promote their stuff, and that's how they do it. And that's great. I think that's great. Both of those guys are well-established. They have a large network inside their particular industries that they write in, and I think that that's great for them. Personally, I think that anyone who's starting out without reducing quality needs to focus on creating more than that. How many a week, how many a month, I don't necessarily know. I can tell you what I do. I like to spread my content out over multiple mediums. Okay, so on a given week, average week, I'm going to create one text-based blog post. I'm going to create one video-based blog post, and I'm going to create one podcast. That's what I do. Video and podcasting, very, very important to me. I also really like the traditional text-based writing. So I give my audience all three, and I let them consume what they're interested in. So three posts a week is what I've been doing for a while now. I find that by varying the mediums, I'll get a lot of people who are interested in my text-based posts but aren't really interested in my video, and that's completely fine. But then the same goes vice versa. I have a completely separate audience that listens to the podcast. So it really allows me to put my message, which is similar in all three spaces, adapted for the type of way that I'm distributing it, you know, audio, video, or text. But it allows me to reach out into all these different communities and get my message in front of them and draw these people back. And, it's worked rather well.
Yeah. I mean, so you just touched on about, you know, content creation, about, you know, blogging. A lot of people think, you know, oh, it's all about writing. They think, oh, I've got to sit down, I got to write a really long article. Obviously that's not the case. I mean, podcasting, video blogging, you know, these are mediums. I think, you know, we both are in a similar situation. You know, we post, similar content, but, you know, across these different mediums. And that's because, you know, we're leveraging the different audience there. You love creating podcasts. I mean, you've got, what, 41 of them.
Yeah.
Did you consider another medium when you first got started with that? Or?
So I actually, for the longest time, was only text-based. I started only text-based. And the podcast was kind of secondary to that. And I had done a few videos, but nothing serious. So I probably was text-based first, then I went to podcasts, and then I've added videos over the last year. If I could only do one, it would be podcast. So if someone said you can only do one of these, if I was giving advice to someone else, I would tell them to do video. But me personally, I would do podcast just because I think that podcasting is the most intimate form of sharing information, and there's a few reasons for that. First, there's nothing for people to watch, right? So in order for me to be engaging, I have to tell stories, I have to change the inflection in my voice, I have to exude a level of passion and enthusiasm and interest through a microphone that, you know, you can not necessarily, you don't have to, you can get away with less, both in the written word and in video, because of those formats. But when you're in somebody's earbuds while they're driving, while they're working around the yard, while they're working at the office, while they're exercising, they're giving up a large portion of their time, 20, 30, 45 minutes of their time. You have to be engaging. And if you are, the connection I personally feel that you make with that audience, your podcasting audience, is just so much deeper. It's just a deeper, richer relationship. The people are, you know, they, you know, rarely ever unsubscribe to your podcast unless you make major changes to it. You know, as long as you continue to be consistent and add value and care about them as an audience, they'll keep caring about you. So I would never give up podcasting. I would give up the other two.
By the way, I tend to agree with you 100% on that. I mean, you know, you know, you have to have a compelling story.
Yep.
You know, you've got to have those changes in your voice. I mean, to like make people actually want to continue listening. Not to mention, you know, in most cases with podcasting, I know I don't really download my podcast. I more so subscribe to somebody's podcast.
Yep.
You know, it's almost like, hey, giving up that email address, you know, when you're signing up for a newsletter. I mean, it's gold. It's saying, hey, you know what? This person really values what I have to say. Therefore, they're going to subscribe.
Yep.
So speaking of like sharing content, you know, we've talked about, you know, content consumption, curation, and creation. Once you've got all of these things under control, obviously, you know, you're battling, you know, that content warfare there.
Yep.
For those of you who read your blog, you know, they'll see you're a huge Google Plus fan. I think you mentioned that earlier.
Huge.
While they've been steadily growing, you know, a lot of people, they think that, you know, it's not the place to be. But, you know, as you've talked about it today, you know, there's a lot of great SEO tips that are being shared on there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tech people on there. And, you know, a lot of people, I guess, they're kind of turned off by that. But I think Google Plus is extremely valuable as well. Are you using, you know, any other social networks? Like, do you actually use Facebook? Because I don't think that's really come up too much in today's conversation. You know, we talk about Twitter and Google Plus.
So it depends on what hat I'm wearing. If I'm wearing my insurance kind of small business marketing hat, then LinkedIn and Facebook are the two social networks I use the most for, you know, besides our blog and YouTube, which is more of a content creation space necessarily than a social network in my mind. But so Facebook and LinkedIn would be the two that we use the most. For content warfare, for the marketing side of what I do, it's Twitter and Google Plus. So I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook, both as an individual or when I'm wearing my content warfare hat. But I do when I'm wearing my kind of insurance marketer hat. I just am completely turned off by the fact that I can't communicate with the people who've liked our page, who've said that they were interested in following our brand, that I actually have to pay to contact them in this space, which I actually got into a huge argument with a buddy of mine the other day because he's like, you know, that makes sense. You know, you're marketing to them, so they, you should pay for that. And my point is that I'm not marketing to them. I'm having communication with them. Talking to them, chatting with them, you know, it's not just me blasting messages. I get if you're going to blast messages at somebody, but, you know, if you're trying to share pictures of what other clients are doing or support this charity, I mean, all these things, you know, to get 10% of the people that you follow, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not trying to play some like moral battle, but it just as a marketer, even it's very frustrating. And I don't know. I think that less and less people are going onto Facebook to buy things and to follow brands. I think that people are frustrated with brands and starting to hide brands on more of a practice is to click a little carrot and hide brand messages. And I just don't want to put too much stock into a social network that I think is really moving towards a day when the only way a brand page can connect with an individual is to have to pay for it. So I'm not a big fan of that. But I do love LinkedIn, especially for kind of B2B work. I think it's fantastic. But Google Plus is my focus because it's a social network that rewards you for being an authority on a topic, both in search and in your ability to connect with people on that and on that particular network. And there's a lot more than just tech thought leaders there. There's thought leaders from all industries, and they're incredibly accessible. And the amount of knowledge I just get from people like Mark Traphagen, who just knows Google Plus inside and out. And if he doesn't have an answer, he knows the exact person that does. Incredible, incredible guy to know if you're interested in Google Plus. And, you know, he will freely give you information right on Google Plus, and you have instant access to him. And I just don't see very many social networks where you can get that, where you have that kind of accessibility to people.
Also, think that, you know, on Google Plus, you know, it going back to one thing I mentioned, which, you know, there's a lot of duplicate content that's being created. You know, I see that all the time on Facebook. You log in and, oh, hey, you know, yesterday's announcement from Facebook about changing, you know, promotion guidelines. There were, you know, 10 individual stories from multiple resources. Oh, hey, did you see this? It's, you know, to me, I think like Google Plus is a little different because, you know, you don't have to really like wade through the content as much. I mean, you kind of, you know, it's inviting. At the same time, you know, a lot of people I think are very, you know, it's about giving credit where credit's due on, you know, on the content that's shared.
Yeah, there's a different culture there. There's more humanity. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that necessarily makes sense, but I just feel like you know, on Facebook, it's just like people just like look down their feed and they just like everything, like, and you know, maybe they leave a comment, but it's usually cheeky or, you know,
it's not adding any value. I mean,
yeah, there's not a culture. Facebook was not created with a culture of adding value, and Google Plus, for better or for worse, maybe it's just now and when more and more consumers and more people enter. You know, I mean, it's not a ghost town by any means is this resounding idea, which is just crazy. But
I don't even know where that started. I mean,
I think it's just like Google Plus haters, like Facebook people started that. I have no idea. but you know what I'm saying? Like there is this community mentality where when you comment on something, you comment with value. It's not just great post. It's great post. Here's why I think so. And here's what I would have added to it. And then, I mean, I posted something today about page speed. I recently moved from Thesis, which is a WordPress framework, to the Genesis framework, their new 2.0 that's built on HTML5.
Yeah.
So I just recently moved the Content Warfare blog from Thesis to Genesis. It has a little different look now, relatively similar, but a little different. And I increased my page speed by 2 full seconds.
Very nice. I'm a huge Genesis user as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible jump in like internet load speed to go from a like 3.7 seconds to 1.23 seconds or something was one of the runs that I had. And so I posted about it because that's, you know, I wanted to let people know, hey, look, I have a direct same content on the homepage here as here and almost a 2 second increase.
And by the way, for all the people listening, this is a little tech talk here, but page speed is very important for, you know, helping with your page rank. You know, if your site loads extremely slow, Google's not going to want to recommend your site, you know, people doing a search for a term, you know, that you may rank really well for. You know, they don't want to recommend it because, you know, it's a poor user experience.
Yeah. And also, you actually, for a slow page speed, you actually get penalized twice. Once, just because you're not – penalized isn't necessarily the correct term. You will be – ranked below similar sites that are faster because – I guess that's a better way to phrase that. One, just the fact that your page loads slow. Two, because a huge ranking factor is someone clicks on a link from Google, goes to your site, and immediately clicks the back button. To Google, that says – this page is not providing a good user experience, proper content. Something is wrong if you click on a link and immediately click the back button. And if your page is slow, that's what people do. So you actually kind of get hit twice with negative implications of having a slow site. So having your site load 2 seconds faster is really nice. So I was very happy. Where I was going with this is I posted that information on Google Plus with a little kind of write up on what I had done and why I thought it was good, and with a screenshot of my page speed test that I did on an awesome tool. So anybody that's listening, tools.pingdom.com, just type in your URL and this tool will tell you how fast your site loads, and then will give you some recommendations on why it's loading. What you could do to make it load faster. Free tool, completely free.
Great suggestion.
Yeah, it's what I use. So I put a screenshot of that thing, and I probably had 20-something people comment on it talking about, hey, what host you use. So we went all the way through, and now you're getting recommendations on hosting services, recommendations on ways to combine external JavaScript, which – mm-hmm. I don't even know necessarily what that means. I have an idea of what that means, but not really. I mean, so now you're having a true, valuable conversation that is helping me with my business because I simply posted something on Google Plus, and I do not think – actually, I guarantee that conversation does not happen on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. That conversation only happens on Google Plus. Because people are so interested in adding value and participating in quality discussions.
Now, speaking of Google Plus, I just want to delve into this a little more. I think, you know, people are adding that valuable content, you know, every time they're commenting on a post. I think they might be doing that possibly because they're also seeing, you know, the long arm of the law. You know, Google controls search basically, to where, you know, when they add value, Google is possibly, you know, maybe people are thinking Google is actually, you know, looking at this content and actually going to then maybe use that for something, to, you know, almost help you show up better in a search. What do you think about that?
I absolutely 100% agree with that. I mean, that's part of why – that's part of like the self-policing of that network is that let's say you start spamming on Google+, which just a little tip for people who may be using Google+, a common tactic that people will do is they post something to their public profile and then they'll reshare it to all these communities inside of Google+. If you're not familiar with Google+, that may not make sense, but for anyone who is, and because what many people think is, okay, I want to share this post with all my communities too. Well, what Google has started doing is marking you as a spammer if you reshare your own post to too many communities in too short a period of time. I don't know what the number of communities is, and I don't know what the period of time is, but I do know because I both moderate and own a couple communities that people are starting to show up when they do that in the queue as spam. So the negative implication of that is that if you get marked as a spammer or you're leaving comments that aren't being plus one'd or you're posting things that aren't being plus one'd, Google is tracking all that information. None of it is being used today in search results. But what Google is doing is starting to wrap their algorithms around what topics we're an authority in. So I talk a lot about content marketing. It's my favorite topic. Content warfare is the name of the brand, my brand. So obviously all the topics we're talking about today are my sweet spot. Google is starting to what extent I have no idea, but Google is starting to apply the term content marketing to my profile and ultimately my website because all of these things are connected because I'm consistently talking about that topic. And the thought is one day I may gain more authority, which may mean search ranking, which may mean who knows, around that topic because I've done all this work on Google Plus of letting them know that, hey, this is my expertise, this is what I'm interested in, and people find it valuable because they plus one it and they comment on it and they reshare it. None of those things actually impact search today, but from just reading everybody and being part of the community, you know, reading all the experts and being part of the community, you know, these are some of the things that Google are starting to do. They're listening to what topics we're an expert on, and Google Plus is the only social network that they have full reign over. You know, they don't know what you do in Facebook, they don't know what you do in LinkedIn or on Twitter, mm-hmm. but they know what you do on Google Plus. And they wouldn't be capturing that information if they weren't planning to do something with it someday.
So getting all techie here, are there any specific Google Plus features or maybe some tips you'd like to share with listeners? You know, I'm in particular, I like the circles trick, basically creating, you know, your main circles, but also maybe having a drafts one so that I can compose updates, put them in my draft circle, and then, you know, go back and edit them and share them later. What tips do you have?
So my tips are mostly around – the tips that I would share with people are mostly around actually the type – the posts that we create, right? The worst type of post that you can create is the link share post, which is like the common Twitter post, which is just like the title of your article and a link, right? That does not fly in the Google Plus community. People are not going to engage with it. What people really want to see is a thought-provoking reason around that article that you're sharing, why they should click through that article that you're sharing. So, you know, first of all, make sure that you understand the markup capabilities of Google Plus posts. So if you put two little stars on the end of a sentence, the star key, the symbols mm-hmm. on each side, that makes those words bold. If you put underscores on either end of a sentence, that makes italics, and I'm forgetting what makes a strike through because I never use it.
I think it's the bracket possibly?
Yeah. Creates a strike through.
And you can actually combine all of these then into one style as well. So you can
yep.
bold, italicize, yeah.
And strike through something if you really wanted to do that. Yeah, so you can combine them all. So use the markups to draw attention just like you would on a blog post that you're creating. And then make sure that you add 2, 3, 4, 5, however many sentences you need. I mean, I've seen 1,000-word Google Plus posts. I mean, that's probably excessive in most cases. But by adding relevant content around the link that you're sharing, you're giving people a reason to click through and to engage with your post. And in a lot of cases, what's actually most effective is to include a link in the description of the post, so where you write the content, and upload an image that's associated with your post. Maybe it's the thumbnail from your post, or a prominent image, or a thought-provoking image, or maybe you take an image and create a little meme or whatever around your post, and share the image as well. So now you have an image with some text and a link, a bold headline which attracts people, catches their eye. And then the last thing that I would add is add hashtags. So hashtags in Google Plus are a way to add keywords that people can easily search for. So if I'm searching for content marketing, I'm going to see everyone who's hashtagged their post, hashtag content marketing. Those are going to show up in that search result for me. So it's another way for you to get found to a relevant community. We really want to build out our Google Plus posts and almost turn them into little mini blog posts, which sounds like a lot of work. But one, once you get the flow of it down, it won't be as much work. And two, the amount of engagement you get on posts where you actually put that work in versus just sharing a link is going to be night and day. I mean, it's almost not even worthwhile to just share a link there, where if you actually put some time in and make it give people a reason to click through, you're going to get significantly more engagement. And then people are going to reshare that to their own feeds, and that description gives people in the person who reshared its feed a reason to click through and all that. So you don't ultimately know how many people are going to end up seeing your post, and you want to make sure that you give everyone who sees it a reason to click through to your site and consume your content.
By the way, and going back to the little hashtag thing, I know also Google will recommend hashtags based on what you are writing about.
Yes.
And one of the tools that I actually mentioned earlier, Tagboard, this is actually a way for you to search hashtags across all of the different networks. So, for example, Google+, you can look up Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can see who all is talking about all of these topics across those different channels. So definitely a great way to obviously search Google Plus hashtags, but then also incorporate other networks to make sure, you're hitting the sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great tip.
So we're almost at the end of today's show, but if listeners want to connect with you, what's the best place for them to do that?
So I would direct them to one or two places. First is just my website, ryanhanley.com. Come there. It's got ways to connect with me, connect with me on Duo Plus, all that stuff. You can consume my content. That's my home base and the best way to connect with me. Or if you're a podcast listener and you're on iTunes, just search Content Warfare or Content Marketing, and you'll see my show pop up. And that's the best way to find my podcast, which anybody who wants to listen to the podcast, I love you. My favorite audience. So that's the two places I direct people.
By the way, on your podcast, you had Chris Brogan on, episode 40?
Yep.
Any other amazing upcoming podcast guests?
I'm going to play it political and say they're all amazing. But I had Ian Cleary today. He was awesome. Chris Ducker is coming up. Chris is big time. He's out of the Philippines. You've probably seen his name a lot, and he's really big into virtual assistants. And we're going to dive into this concept that he has. He talks about like B2B and B2C, and what he actually recommends is P2P, person to person, which is a really neat concept. I think you'd enjoy that. And Dustin Stout, who's a big time Google Plus guy and has written a couple posts in recent weeks that have been fairly epic, like game changing. Studies that he's done and stuff. So we're gonna nerd out on Google Plus big time. So those are two guests coming up that I'm really looking forward to.
And by the way, for anyone who's looking for a great track to listen to, you know, whether it's at the gym, you're making that commute to and from work, or you know what, you're struggling with consuming content and you need some like tips and you just need to decompress, you know, I recommend subscribing to the Content Warfare podcast on iTunes. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's the one thing we've talked about a lot today. You know, it's adding value, whether it's, you know, on Google Plus, in a podcast, in a blog post. You know, it's definitely something you don't want to miss. Ryan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today's show. You know, this concludes our social media marketing podcast with Ryan Hanley, owner of Content Warfare Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, man. It's been such a pleasure and really, really great chat. And I just, you know, thanks for having me, man.
You're very welcome. By the way, I think this is our longest podcast, clocking in at about an hour.
Oh, well, it didn't feel like an hour. So hopefully it didn't feel like an hour for everyone listening.
So by the way, guys, you can learn more about Ryan on his blog. That's ryanhanley.com. If you want to be a featured guest on our next podcast, please contact us through our website, christiankonline.com/contact. Ryan, great speaking with you.
Thanks so much, man.